Hi, I'm Moji Alawodeyau from the Feminist Buzzkills Live Pod, the only podcast that helps you navigate the news in this post-pro anti-abortion hellscape. Each week, with co-host Liz Winstead, we dissect all the news from that sketchy intersection of abortion and misogyny with providers and activists working on the ground. The cherry on top is we have amazing comedy guests who help us laugh through the rage. Feminist Buzzkills Live drops Fridays wherever you pod. Listen and subscribe, because when BS is popping, we pop off.
MSW Media.
Spy Talk, a podcast at the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, national security, and military operations.
Hi there, I'm Jeff Stein, and this is Spy Talk. Well, you might think that's a happy crowd at a baseball game, proudly belting out our national anthem, but you would be wrong. That's the so-called Jan 6 Choir, 20 men who were convicted for their involvement in the attack on the U.S. Capitol. They were recorded singing the Star Spangled Banner inside the D.C. jail in March 2021. Donald Trump then enhanced the rudimentary recording with slick production values and his own reading of the Pledge of Allegiance. It's been a YouTube hit. Among the convicted were members of the Proud Boys, the violence-obsessed organization of youngish white men who played a key role in the assault on the Capitol. Four of its leaders were sentenced to prison on sedition and related charges, some for long terms. At least another 70 members were charged with participating in the violence. Now, you'd think that would take them off the streets. But that crackdown hasn't stopped the Proud Boys, as my guest today, Reuters investigative reporter Aram Rosten, wrote early this month after a lengthy deep dive on the group. Some Proud Boys, he reported, say they are preparing to emerge once again as a physical force for Trump, drawn to his hardline nationalism and convinced that their leaders will be pardoned if he wins. Trump himself, Rosten noted, promises to pardon convicted January 6 rioters if he's elected. And that poses a problematic challenge for FBI and Homeland Security agents who are legally obligated to protect and defend the Constitution, in particular, the right to free speech, no matter how odious. Aram Rosten, welcome to Spy Talk. You wrote a remarkable story about the Proud Boys back in early June, which opens with really a startling kind of episode to me. We had thought the Proud Boys had slithered off into the night. A lot of them are in jail, including one of their leaders. And you write the scene near Bedminster Country Club, Trump's, you know, summertime headquarters. Could you describe that scene for us?
So we were there where the road turns off the highway towards, there's a gas station, the road leads up to Trump's, our country club, and there's sometimes a group of pro-Trump protesters. They have signs, and there's they're all very enthusiastic and loud, and we're yelling at cars. And a convoy came when I was there. A convoy showed up. There were these big trucks, loud horns. And then there was this large, one of them was a Chevy Tahoe. And flying from it were these Proud Boy flags, two Proud Boy flags with the Proud Boy wreath that if you follow the Proud Boys, you get familiar with this. It's a Fred Perry symbol, which they've adopted. And these two large flags flying openly and a Trump for President flag. They drive by, they flash the OK sign, which, you know, the OK sign has been co-opted by white supremacists as sort of a trolling thing to do.
Yeah.
Right. And then they drive by twice. They turn around, they park, and four Proud Boys get out of the car. They didn't want to talk to me, but they were glad handing the other Trump supporters who just greeted them very warmly. As heroes, as long lost heroes, as they say in the story.
Did this amount to essentially sort of their debut, their reemergence? Was this a very kind of a first public showing that they haven't gone away, that they're back and even better at bigger numbers?
Perhaps. I mean, really, it was a lot of over time. This year, we've seen them show up at Trump rallies. That's when we're seeing them pro-Trump again. In the last over the last couple of years, they were actually around. They were at LGBTQ affairs, protesting so-called what they call a drag queen book hours or story hours.
Yeah,
and they would protest those sort of things. But now suddenly, bang, they're back in politics, at Trump rallies in a big way.
And these Trump crowds at rallies or the fans, the MAGA fans who mingle or show up outside Mar-a-Lago and Bedminster and so on, they love the Proud Boys. Is that their reaction to them?
I'm not sure they all do, but there are certainly some who see them as a novelty and see them as, sort of real hardcore Trump supporters.
Hmm. Do you think that this also means that they're about to carry out violent acts on the part for Trump's benefit again?
They're not saying that, of course. They are not saying that. But violence is sort of part of their charter, if you put it that way. And they always say, it's only violence in reaction. They sort of are fighting back against Antifa agitators is the way they see it. But there's no doubt they want to pride themselves on being active, being a physically aggressive bunch.
Don't they have sort of a Fight Club slogan?
Well, they do. They even have, to rise in one level in the Proud Boys, according to one of their rule books, you have to get in a big physical altercation or get arrested.
Mm-hmm. So if you wade into a crowd of Antifa or pro-Biden people or counter-demonstrators and just punch somebody out, then you can rise up in the organization.
Well, they claim they'll never throw the first punch, but,
right.
A lot of groups do say that.
Mm.
They definitely, who knows what, and then violence, we haven't seen Antifa this year as much either, right? So
exactly. This is why your piece was so enlightening. We haven't seen much of them, and suddenly, bang, you say they're back.
Yes, and they're back in ways that they – here's what's interesting about it. I think they are – they have the same ideology, the identical ideology they had when their members led the January 6th attack on Capitol Hill. They have the same ideology. They have the same – many of them are the same people. They have the same goals. They have the same enemies in mind. And they have the same president that they like, that is to say, the same candidate that they support, Trump. They're much more overt now than they have been in the last couple of years in support of Trump. And there's a couple of other dimensions. Now, suddenly, they've got a cause of prisoners who they believe should be freed. They're prisoners. They're old leaders. They're old comrades. They're old brethren who, the leaders were jailed, some of them for more than two decades, and many of their, I think we say that over 70 were jailed.
70.
Over 70.
And yet that has not, by your account, depleted their strength. They seem to be growing.
They say they're growing. It's tough to say, the numbers. We weren't able to actually calculate, the numbers, but it's, experts will say it's, the Proud Boys will say there's thousands. Experts have said there's thousands too. And we have one police estimate, where it varies from 300 to 3,000, that we quote. It's very tough to know how many.
As a group, what are their rules? It's verboten, you might say, to talk to reporters. And yet some of them did talk to you off the record or on background, and quite a few.
That's
and
right.
Then you also had three interviews with the founder of continuing inspiration for the Proud Boys, Gavin McGinnis. You interviewed him three times, I think you said. And he claims that there are about 5,000 Proud Boys, down from 8,000 during Trump's presidency, but up from lows after the Capitol riot arrests. Official estimates of the Proud Boys, you write, are varying. They vary widely from only 300 to 3,000 members, but it seems to me there are more than 300 by your reporting.
There's well over 100 and change in terms of numbers of clubs. There's a lot of clubs out there. So the math would, analysis would indicate there's quite a few of these Proud Boys.
And does this amount to kind of a performance art on their part, or do you think the threat of violence is real?
I think it's both. I mean, all we can say is in the past, we've seen violence. And violence, they don't even pay lip service to, abhorring violence and that sort of thing that many groups will profess. They glorify violence, right? And so one doesn't know. It's more than lip service. Is it performative? Yeah, they are. They do wear those colors. They sort of like to say that the rest of the world doesn't get their jokes. It's all, they'd like to say some of the more outlandish things they say are just humor, irony, and this sort of thing, and that people take them too literally. But again, after a lot of the violence that one saw in 2020 and January 6, 2021, experts say, there's a real good reason to take them seriously, and they're dangerous.
Mm. And there are the inevitable comparisons of them to the Nazi brown shirts, who were street thugs organizing for Hitler during the 1930s and intimidating his opponents. Do you buy that analogy?
I mean, historians say, I spoke to a couple of historians, they say there's definitely a parallel. Obviously, these are all male groups who waged violence on the streets against leftists, the leftists of their day, in this case, Antifa, in the old cases, communists or trade unionists. The experts say there are some differences, right? But they also say there's some similarities, whether it's and then there are these other things. There was a period when the Proud Boys were wearing very, very provocative T-shirts, joke or not, sort of right-wing or insignia, right-wing death squad, for example, or sort of joking about people falling from helicopters in imitation of the way that they would allegedly, Pinochet sort of,
an imitation of the Argentines who threw leftists out of helicopters.
Yeah, exactly.
I saw one photo, and I think you referenced it in your piece, of one guy saying Pinochet, the Chilean dictator, was right. I mean, this is pretty blatant stuff. But one of the big differences between them and the brown shirts, seems to me, is that their leadership has evolved in order to avoid federal prosecution. They have decentralized, right?
So that one of the huge changes you've been pointed to, we said in our story, one big change is they got rid of a layer of leadership. They no longer have national leaders. Let's say they had Enrique Tarrio, who was the sort of colorful character who was always omnipresent at some of these things and was, was pretty happy to do interviews. They got rid of that. They got rid of this group of what they call elders who made decisions for the groups about various trivia and rules and regulations and who was in and who was out. And now they don't have that. They have these autonomous chapters, well over 100. I forget the exact numbers, 140 or so chapters that are throughout the country. And in fact, internationally, and they do communicate, but there's no leader of them all.
Unless we included Trump as a leader, he's given unambiguous encouragement to the Proud Boys. Maybe not in exactly the same length, stand by, be ready, and so on. But he has said that violence will break out if he loses or gets sentenced to jail, which is unlikely, but could happen. However the election goes, it seems the threat of violence from them is in the air. So they're prepared to carry out violence. Very clear. It's in their DNA, you might say. So this poses a big challenge to the FBI. As you have written in the past, the FBI had a lot of sources or a number of sources in the Proud Boys in the past, going back 4 or 5 years. But the Proud Boys weren't informing on the Proud Boys. They were informing on and infiltrating Antifa and other groups and telling the FBI about it. So they were using the FBI to neutralize their enemies. They weren't giving up their secrets to the FBI. Is that a correct rendering of what went on?
In the past, well, there's two things. One, let me just respond to what you were saying about Trump's messaging to the Proud Boys. In the past, of course, it was prosecutors and experts and Proud Boys themselves thought that he was, well, he said, at one point, he said, stand by and stand down, right? Stand down and stand by. And they took that to mean stand by, right? As we know, because they said it. He hasn't said that this go around for sure, but he has alluded to threats of violence. We interview at one point, as you said, Gavin McGinnis, and he sort of mocks the idea that Trump could call them to action. But again, that doesn't mean he's right, right? The experts sort of see Trump's messaging as something that happens. And then this other issue, which I forgot. I'm so sorry. I forgot. As you were asking me a question, and I forgot what it was.
What can the FBI do about them?
I know. I think you were asking me the relationship between the FBI and whether they were using the Proud Boys in the past to spy on the left. In essence,
it seems so.
And it seems, well, I've written in the past, they had a number of people talking to the FBI and other law enforcement. And yes, you know, as you say, they weren't really talking about what the Proud Boys were going to do. They were talking about what the Proud Boys adversaries on the street in street battles were going to do. As if the Proud Boys, you know, as one FBI said, as if the Proud Boys were, like, you know, acting, you know, on their behalf.
We have to step away for a second. Okay, we're back. You know, maybe we're too Washington-centric about the threat the Proud Boys pose. As you report in your really terrific piece, the Proud Boys now operate with self-governing chapters in more than 40 states with little apparent central coordination. Its Canadian founder remains an inspirational figure, you write, to today's Proud Boys. We mentioned Gavin McGinnis earlier. He seems to be a eminence grise of the Proud Boys. He doesn't, he certainly will not say he's a leader in any way, but he sort of sends signals. He mediates between disputes, between chapters and so on. Can you tell us a little bit more about him? Tell him, what's he like, by the way?
He can be funny. He's definitely witty. He's definitely a bit prickly, and he definitely likes talking to the press, it seems. But he's also, he won't say if he's still a Proud Boy, although he, you know, definitely stepped down as its leader way back in 2018. He said that was because at the time, you know, at the time, two Proud Boys were facing charges on it for a street battle in New York City. And, they were ultimately convicted. And he said him stepping down was some step to sort of reduce their sentencing liability because he made it seem less like a gang. I'm not sure if it's valid or if that's valid or not, but there's no doubt he's viewed, some say he's viewed as the quote godfather now of the Proud Boys. He's steeped in it still. Even if he's not, you know, a leader, he's still on his TV. He's got this TV show that called "Get Off My Lawn." It's on his own online platform
channel.
Yeah, it's called Censored, and there's no doubt he's got pictures of Proud Boy flags. He's got on his backdrop. He's got Proud Boy flags. He's got a well-produced bumper where you have these sort of graphics showing Proud Boys. Even if he's not in the Proud Boys or a leader, he's definitely part of the fabric, I think it's fair to say.
Going back to this, again, it conjures up analogies with the brown shirts. Hitler wasn't ordering Ernest Röhm, the head of the brown shirts, what to do. In fact, he saw them as a threat and wiped them out eventually. Hitler certainly approved of what these street thugs were doing in Germany in the 1930s. And I know your piece is about the Proud Boys, not the FBI or law enforcement in general. But do you think that these activities rise to a level where the FBI could get a warrant to eavesdrop on them with, you know, bugs and cyber intrusions and so on, to disrupt them, to encourage factional fights, and, of course, to develop informants in the group. What, do you have an opinion about that?
Well, you know, I mean, the FBI does. I mean, the FBI agents make it pretty plain. This is not, you know, it's not categorized as a criminal street gang just because of the nature of laws, right? So, there's freedom of association. People are allowed to join the Proud Boys. They're allowed to propagate this ideology. The only thing the FBI says is, you know, and the government in general says, they do not investigate groups like this. They only investigate specific crimes. And that's the Constitution.
Well, I know the FBI, we could say maybe the FBI is a different organization than it was in the 1960s, but they have a very ugly history of infiltrating the Black Panthers and other groups, causing disruption, carrying out break-ins against the Socialist Workers Party and so on. And after 9/11, they were not hesitant at all to pay visits to Muslims in the United States without much of a predicate, just to sort of drop in on them and say, you better watch your step. Have you seen any evidence that the FBI is doing that toward the Proud Boys now?
If you don't mind, I'd rather not go there. It's interesting because one doesn't really know. And one doesn't really know until one knows, right, with the FBI.
Yeah, that's right. So it's hard to say because it would be secret.
It would be, right? So even in this case, like the FBI was resistant even after January 6th to really weigh into whether it had any informants in the Proud Boys. Mm. You know, they were really reluctant. Mm.
They denied even following people on social media, which was false.
Remember that, right? Yeah, so.
Now, you interviewed a former FBI agent by the name of Mark Saylor. Am I pronouncing that correctly, or Saylor?
Sure, yeah.
Who investigated the Proud Boys after retiring at the end of 2021. But he told you that after the Capitol riots, he testified that after the Capitol riots, there would be, quote, no excuse this time not to take them seriously. So I guess we're just left to guess what the FBI is doing in terms of not taking them seriously.
Just as much as anybody else in the FBI, he's one who sort of keeps on, you know, repeating they're not an illegal group. It's legal to belong to them, to support them, and so forth. But, you know, they're not a designated terrorist group because there's no such thing as a designated domestic terrorist group at all. So, but he does, you know, he used that phrase because, of course, their history in leading the January 6th attack. It's just a fact. Members of this group led the January 6th attack and were convicted of doing that.
And how else could you find out if they are plotting terrorist attacks? Let's call them what they are, terrorist attacks, in any of the 48 states that the former assistant director of Capitol Police Intelligence said they're active in 48 states. How would you know about their plots unless you infiltrated them, wiretapped them, so on? I mean, it's a real knotty issue for law enforcement.
It's a real knotty issue, and that's why I thought it was so interesting that this group is still, you know, it's sort of unveiling itself more and more. And it's not just people, you know, pounding their own chests. They're definitely there. They're not that hard for me to find. They weren't that hard for me to find, meaning they're not that hard for others to find. Now, they don't talk to me publicly. They don't talk to, again, that's the one of the big changes has been they're not allowed to, each one is supposedly prohibited from talking to journalists. They did it. They do it. They're not incredible. You know, they don't stick to their own rules that much. But, you know, how does one find out what they're doing if they don't talk about it? Like Terrio, right? Remember, a lot of the stuff on Terrio put a lot of what he said on Twitter or on Parler and so forth, remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, you did a marvelous job of getting some of them to talk to you. You traveled around the country. You were out west, and I'm trying to find my notes here. you went to some
in Arizona.
In Arizona, you went to some bar, and one of the Proud Boy guys is a lead singer in a kind of a punk band. They're called the Misfits, I think.
He was. It was an old. It's you know back then. It was Michael Graves, and he was. He's you know he's a very soft-spoken, pleasant character, and it was a diverse crowd that saw him, and a couple of the guys were Proud Boys there, and I tried speaking to them, and they were very, very unhappy to talk, unlike some other Proud Boys I've talked to. They were like, we don't talk to the press anymore, as they say in the story.
Yeah, the guy gave you the evil eye when you approached him at the bar. That was a great scene. You know, in invites questions, your reporting invites questions of whether they will eschew any more organized assaults on the Capitol and maybe seek to disrupt vote counting, electoral vote counting in places like Arizona, which are deeply polarized. And there have been efforts by Trump supporters already to subvert the electoral process and stack the vote counting boards and so on. And you quote Michael Graves, the leader of the former leader of the Misfits punk band, is saying, if Trump loses, our republic, the country goes away, bad things are going to happen. Should we take that seriously?
Well, a lot of the Proud Boys will say things like that. And what they're sort of saying, it's interesting, they're doing mirror imaging. They're alleging it's the left that is going to be the threat, right? They're the ones that are going to turn things undemocratic, right?
But we don't know of any left-wing equivalent of the Proud Boys. I mean, Antifa grows, seems to have also disappeared from the scene lately, but they show up and they have, you know, little street battles. You didn't see, despite MAGA claims, wasn't Antifa leading the January 6th assault. These were Proud Boys and other right-wingers and a variety of Trump supporters who led the assault on the Capitol on January 6th. So the idea that there's just no left-wing Proud Boys, nothing like it.
I guess that's true. I mean, I don't know that Antifa, even the ones that do exist, Antifa definitely exists or has existed, but they're not very certainly loyal to Biden. They're not very supportive of Joe Biden.
No, they're not supporters of Biden even.
They're anarchists.
We're not talking about Democrats.
You're right. I'm just saying. Oh yeah, I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to litigate whether or not the Proud Boys are correct when they make these claims. I'm just saying it is their obviously their claim that it's the left that's going to cause the problems and not them, but they do. They're not, whether they'll, the January 6th, no one knows if January 6th happen again. I mean, no one knows any of that stuff. What is true is the Proud Boys do have, it is no doubt they have a history of violence, of street battles against leftist or, democratic groups, or those that they dislike. And what is true is the ones that are out there now have the identical ideology they had before, and they have one more additional grievance, which is that they believe their leaders are unfairly and unjustly imprisoned.
Speaking of them, there are, what, some 70 Proud Boy identifying people who are in prison now? Now, after sentencing, a number of January 6th defendants have said they were really sorry they were there. They were really sorry what they did. Some have broken down and wept and apologized for hurting their families and hurting their friends and so on. And I suppose that includes a number of the Proud Boys themselves. In fact, I think it does. I haven't looked at all the past reporting on it today, but what do you think? Do you think the Proud Boys are organizing in prison, like the Aryan white supremacy Aryan groups, organized groups in prison? Have you heard anything about that?
I haven't. It's really interesting. I have not heard what they're doing in prison these days. It is true, though, that it's true for the other Proud Boys who were for Proud Boys who were out. it's a real grievance. They have they were protesting the unjust, what they say is the unjust imprisonment of their comrades and former leaders, and they want them released. And it's one of their platform. It's one of their sort of the main points they're pushing, and that's why it's also one of the reasons they support Trump. They say because he has promised to release so many January 6th rioters.
It's a big, you know, as you report, that's a good reason for a lot of them just to show up and maybe engage only in this performance art, you know, showing up with guns or in their flags and so on at state capitals and at voting boards, school board meetings and so on. Only time will tell, to invoke the cliche, whether this moves beyond performance art. You know, young guys, they have a lot of energy, pent-up energy. A lot of them join the military. They want to kill things. They want to knock things around. That's the DNA of young men, or so many young men. And so, you know, the Proud Boys provide sort of their version of Boy Scouts in an ironic kind of way. You know, it's a group to identify with. It's the same thing that the jihadi recruiters use, you know, get off your couch and do something for Islam. And here it says, get off your couch and do something for Trump. And I'm betting that half these Proud Boys, you know, really don't know what they're getting into and don't have a predilection for violence beyond, you know, punching each other out or maybe punching some left-wing demonstrator. But time will tell. We'll see what happens on January 6th.
Well, I don't know if January 6th is really going to be as important as a date this time around. You know, there may have been some legal changes, but, you know, whether there will be street violence
around the election
The election or at any point is another, you know, is still a valid question. I mean, it sees itself, or they portray themselves as a fraternity, but, you know, a fraternal organization. Sometimes I say it's a fraternal organization. Depends on who you talk to there. It's like the Elks Clubs or something like that, right? Or sometimes they, it's like the Hell's Angels, right? Or they'll, you know, they sort of vary their comparisons a little bit. And if you see in the article, I quote that, you know, Gavin sometimes claimed that they're structured a little bit like the Hell's Angels, although that may not be true anyway.
Not taking central directions, but unified by a central idea of violence.
Yeah, central sort of
intimidation, you might say.
And structures and rules for their autonomous chapters. But they see themselves that way, but they also, and they'll often say, they claim to be a drinking club or a men's club where men can be men and so forth. But there's no doubt they're political. They've just expressed enough interest in politics. They've been out there enough to be politics. It's part of their DNA too. They've also, their relationship with Trump is complicated. Early on, after January 6th, many of them sort of turned away from Trump. That was reported. They would criticize him for not supporting them, you know, immediately after January 6th. But and then, as I said, for the last few years, their protests were mainly sort of cultural issues, right? You know, LGBT issues, drag
critical
queen,
race theory,
drag queen story
drag
hours
queens
or whatever.
So,
but now this year, it's really shifted.
What your reporting shows that we got to be ready. Ready for what? We don't really know yet. And we can only hope that the FBI, while observing constitutional protections of free speech, we want this. It's important. We want them also not to be lulled to sleep by stunts and to know what's going on inside the organization. How else will they know if violent plots are hatched and en route? Well, we'll find out, and we'll probably have you back to talk about it again around election time. So anyway, Aaron Rossen, great to have you on the show, my old friend, and I look forward to doing it again. And that's it for this week's Spy Talk. Be sure to check out our complete podcast archive on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you haven't already, do check out the spytalk.co news site on Substack, where we offer a steady diet of scoops and original analyses on the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, and military operations. Just Google Spy Talk and you'll quickly find your way there. This edition of the Spy Talk podcast was smoothly produced, as always, by Kanai and expertly edited by Molly Hawkey for MSW Media. That's it. See you around. I'm Jeff Stein.
For more original reporting and insights like this, subscribe to SpyTalk.co on Substack and follow us on Twitter at @talk_spy. If you enjoyed our podcast, subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MSW Media.
I'm Brian Karam, and I've spent decades covering politics. Now I'm taking you behind the scenes, one interview at a time.
Join us as each week Brian confronts the issues that matter, posing the questions you wish you could ask. No filter, no agenda, just the truth.
We're not here for sound bites. We're here for substance. Join me, Brian Karam, every week as we cut through the noise and get straight to it. This is Just Ask the Question, where curiosity will lead us to the facts.
Subscribe now on your favorite podcast platform. And remember, when you want answers, all you have to do is just ask the question.